This should be played at high volume. Welcome to Out of Pocket. Here's your host, Michael Davis.
Welcome to Out of Pocket with Michael Davis on Tobacco Road Sports Radio, tobaccoroadsportsradio.com, and WWBG 1470 AM as part of your TGI Friday lineup. We got a stacked show. We have new guests, Mason Childress and Ryan Frick. Ryan Frick being from Tap Outs and Touchdowns later on in the show. But right now, we are joined by Out of Pocket regular Jackson Cordray. Jackson, how are you doing this fine Friday?
I'm good, Michael. How you doing, man?
Doing pretty good. Also, I missed you last week. I'm glad you're safe and everything. And I hope you saw that John thought my rankings last week were better than yours.
Yeah, no, that didn't happen at all. I'm safe. We had a good time. You know, Hurricane came through. Family's safe. Your power rankings and the LeBron wash segment. I don't know about that one, Michael. I'm not sure about that one.
That's why we had to tackle that when you weren't on the show. But what we are tackling on the show is there's a team missing in your rankings this week. And it's a team that you've been very high on, very vocal about. And does it have anything to do with their loss in the first ever Germany NFL game, the Seattle Seahawks losing to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers? Enough for you to drop them out of your top quarter rankings that we post every week on our Facebook and Instagram. Jackson, what was your thoughts on the Seahawks and Buccaneers game?
My thoughts were this. Well, first off, I want to address they're right at the 9 spot in my power rankings. I have them at 9 or 10.
Sure.
They're right there. I mean, they're borderline. You know, I was thinking maybe put them above Dallas. I was thinking it. But
I was out of pocket, but go on.
It wasn't out of pocket, Michael. But I thought I'd say this. The Germany game was great. It was electric. Fans after the game, everybody in the stadium stayed. They were singing Sweet Caroline. It was an amazing atmosphere. I want them to go back to Germany as much as possible. It was a beautiful, beautiful game. Loved every bit of it. From a Seahawks perspective, Geno struggled the first couple of quarters. And then he turned into that guy. That guy you need him to be every quarter of the game for the Seahawks to win dominantly. Buck started playing off coverage, zone, deep zone, kind of prevent, and Geno just torched them up back-to-back-to-back possessions. Seattle's biggest issue all game was stopping the run. They couldn't do it. One of their nose tackles was out, inactive, a healthy scratch too. I think that's one of the key reasons why they lost. They also play a bare front, which isn't great against inside the zone, like inside tackle runs. So I think they got to figure out how to stop the run, figure out their fronts. I really thought the coverage played well. Brady threw a pick. Shout out to Cody Barton for picking that off. Geno played well the fourth quarter, but they couldn't get the run going either, right? They struggled in the trenches on both sides of the ball, offense and defense. To win in the NFL, you have to succeed on both sides of the ball in the trenches, and that's what Seattle didn't do. And you got to give credit to the Bucs. They're figuring it out. They're figuring it out at the right time because we all know Brady every year is going to figure it out at some point in time, and that's what they're doing right now. But from a Seahawks perspective, they have a bye week this week, and they go and play the Raiders. The Raiders is a great bounce-back game. You go beat up Derek Carr for a couple of quarters. You go to 7-4, and you figure it out the rest of the way through. But until they figure out how to stop the run and how to run the ball efficiently, they're going to have a hard time offensively and defensively.
Now, we will get to talk about the Raiders here in a couple minutes, but you mentioned something. Tom Brady always figures it out. And I just want to point out to you, Jackson, and everyone listening to Out of Pocket with Michael Davis as part of their TGI Friday lineup, Tom Brady is 2-0 ever since his divorce with Giselle. This is very odd for me because the Buccaneers have had an off year, quote unquote, and they're 5-5 on top of a really bad NFC South team. They have the talent. They have the defense. I feel like Tampa's defense has been underrated for much of the year. They had they held Dallas to 3 points opening week, and everybody was like, the sky's falling on Dallas. They took to Geno Smith. Geno Smith actually struggled for the first time. Seahawks couldn't get a running game going. Kenneth Walker has been unstoppable this year ever since taking the field. And the Buccaneers held them to, what, 17 points on the ground? Like under 2 yards a carry? This Buccaneer defense is legit. Tom Brady has a chip on his shoulder. And Jackson, speaking of our rankings, I was very, very tempted to put Tampa Bay at 8 rather than Tennessee. Tennessee's looked impressive and will really, you know, see more from them as the season wears on. They've recovered ever since, you know, adjusting to life without A.J. Brown. But Tampa Bay, I would have no problem saying they're a top 10 team, a top 8 team in the NFL, and not too long.
I don't disagree with you at all. I think Tampa's really figuring it out. Like you said, after the divorce, he's 2-0. Tom Brady's one of those guys that is, you give him a chip, you give him something to be angry about, he's going to be the scariest player in the NFL going forward. He may not be the most talented pound-for-pound quarterback in the league, but he's the smartest guy in the league, and he's going to figure it out. And if you give him something to be angry about, that's a scary team moving forward, especially how they play the run. Like you said, Kenneth Walker, K9, has been going off. Rookie of the month. Has 500 yards at 5.1 yards per carry. He is a freak of nature. He's a stud. He reminds me of LeSean McCoy. But when you stop him, you give him 10 rushes for 17 yards, and he can't do anything, that is just a show to how talented that defensive front is for the Bucs. And going forward, that is a scary team that nobody wants to see, especially with Tom Brady upset.
And hopefully, you know, for you, I don't know if I want this because you're going to come back on the show obnoxious, putting Seattle as like your top 5 team or whatever. But they have an opportunity to bounce back against the Raiders, who have been very dysfunctional. So dysfunctional that the Colts fired their head coach, Frank Reich. Just on a whim, hired Jeff Saturday as their interim head coach with no logical reason whatsoever, and won a game against the Raiders. Seattle could very much so get back on track against Derek Carr and the Raiders. So I like seeing the Colts hire Jeff Saturday, who has not really any coaching experience, and beat the Raiders. You know, I guess this is a twofold question, whether, you know, Jeff Saturday can sustain long-term success as the Colts head coach, or if this is just how bad the Raiders are and the Raiders need to get out of this Josh McDaniels situation rather quickly.
Yeah, I read a stat earlier, a little detailed piece on ESPN that showed that Josh McDaniels, when he was originally a coach a couple years ago, years ago, before the whole, you know, Tom Brady Patriots era, he was 6-0, got caught cheating, and since then, he is 7-24 as a head coach. And here's the thing. The Raiders can't fire him. The Raiders are money broke. They don't have enough money to fire somebody else and hire somebody new.
It would cost them
money for that. So he's going to be the coach for the next year, maybe 2 years. Because they do not have the financial status to fire and hire a new coach. Now, with that being said, Jeff Sunday, because he's Saturday. Jeff Sunday until he loses a game. He is Jeff Sunday. Coaching experience outside of a high school team on the outskirts of Atlanta, Georgia, that he was coaching. He was hired with no coaching experience, goes in, short week, beats the Raiders. An NFL team. And going forward, I'm not saying that, hey, this Colts team has something to prove, but Jeff Sunday is here to prove it to each and every one of us. And if he maintains some sort of relevancy with this team, with this Colts team, I'm not saying you hire him on the spot. I'm not saying he is your head coach as the Colts. But if they finish the year with a positive record above 500 with Jeff Sunday, you have to leave him. You can't fire that guy.
Well, obviously. I mean, look at their schedule. They have the Eagles this weekend. They'll They'll have pretty much a gimme game against the Steelers on ESPN. I believe that's Monday Night Football. And then, but the rest of their schedule's brutal. They got the Cowboys in Dallas. They got Minnesota in Minnesota. They got the Chargers. They got the Giants before ending on the Texans. Like, this is not an easy schedule for the Colts. And, you know, speaking of, you know, what we're seeing from the Colts, they'll have Philly, and the NFC East continues to be the talk of the town. You got the Eagles, who finally lost. There's no longer an undefeated team in the NFL. They lost the Washington Commanders, who are now a part of the playoff picture. Eagles got Indianapolis this weekend before facing the Packers the following week. The Giants got an easy dub over the Texans. They got the Lions at home before playing Dallas on Thanksgiving. And Cowboys dropped a game against Green Bay, which is no surprise. They usually don't win those Green Bay games, especially at Lambeau. And then Dallas has Minnesota this weekend before having the Giants on Thanksgiving. So this is a tough division. And with the record so tight, all of these teams would be in the playoffs right now. Eagles would win the division. Giants and Cowboys would be a wild card. I want to know your opinion, because obviously I'm a tad biased with my Cowboys. I still have them in my top eight as of now, giving them a little grace for losing that Packers game. How do you see this shaking up? Do we have three legit playoff teams this year in the NFC East?
I think you have three legit playoff teams for sure. Three legit for sure. My question is, how far will the Eagles fall, right? I wasn't impressed all the way through the 8-0 at all. And I might be the one fan to say that. I'm not blown away by Jalen Hurts. I'm not blown. The offensive line and the skill positions they have on that team, that's legit. They are legit at the skill position. But defensively, I like them. I don't think they're amazing. I don't think they're spectacular. And that may be ignorant speaking, but man, I think the Cowboys may be the best team in that division. And I'm not trying to be some sort of, you know, Cowboys lover here, but I think they're good. I think they're good, and I think they're better than Eagles. I'm just not impressed by them, Michael.
Jackson, for all your out-of-pocket takes, you sure do know how to butter the host up and, you know, keep your spot reserved on out-of-pocket. You can come on the show and say that any time. And speaking of my Dallas Cowboys, it's a really big game, and I feel like, you know, Cowboys beat the Giants earlier this year, and they'll face each other again on Thanksgiving. Thanksgiving, wonderful tradition of football, and usually teams didn't want to play on football on Thanksgiving. They didn't want to play on Thanksgiving, and there were two teams in the NFL who were like, we'll play on Thanksgiving, and it was the Detroit Lions and Dallas Cowboys, and that hasn't changed since. Now everyone wants to play on Thanksgiving. You know, you have the Bills and Lions this year. Lions, great offense. Bills have dropped two. They've also dropped out of my top quarter rankings. I believe they've dropped out of yours as well.
They did.
And that'll be a big game. I'm kind of expecting the Lions to have an upset here, but Josh Allen needs to get on underway. And then the Giants have the Cowboys in a NFC East showdown. Jackson, I don't know. Cowboys had the Packers last week. They'll have the Minnesota Vikings this Sunday, and then they turn right around and play the Giants. Those are three tough games back to back to back in 10-day span. I don't know. This could change the playoff picture a lot if the Cowboys aren't careful.
I absolutely agree. I think they got to finish this out. I think they got to – honestly, I'm really high on the Cowboys. And I know I'm not trying to butter you up, Michael. I know you said that a second ago, but I'm actually –
You're doing good. You're doing good.
Okay, yeah, I appreciate it. And I hope to get an invite to come back on next week. But like I was saying, I'm really high on the Cowboys. I'm low on the Vikings. I'm low on the Giants. And I'm high on the Cowboys. And I'm low on the Eagles as well. I think the Cowboys have a legitimate shot to be the best team in the NFC. And going forward, they show the Giants who they are. They show the Vikings who they are. I'm going to have a hard time not putting them top three in my power rankings.
Wow. And with that defense, you can get anywhere, but we got to get into a break. When we come back, we invite a brand new panelist on the show, Mason Childress, to talk something we don't usually talk about. It's college sports next on Out of Pocket with Michael Davis. Welcome back to Out of Pocket with Michael Davis on Tobacco Road Sports Radio, tobaccoroadsportsradio.com, and WWBG 1470 AM as part of your TGI Friday lineup. We have what I like to call a college carousel segment on. We don't usually talk about college, but there's so much going on. College football, basketball, college football season winding down, college basketball season winding up. Went to a Duke game last week when they destroyed SC Upstate before they lost to Kansas. And we got Jackson joining us again. And we got a good friend of ours, Mason Childress, joining the show for the first time. Mason, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great, Michael. Thanks for having me. Happy to be here.
Of course. Now, Mason, I know you're not a Duke fan, which that was my hesitation for having you on the show. But I was wondering what your thoughts were about the Duke game this past weekend, or this past week. They fell to Kansas, and Kansas is a really good team. It was down to the wire, and it's one of those games where a team's going to lose it, you know, and Kansas got hot towards the end, and, you know, unfortunately, Duke took the L. So what are your thoughts on your most beloved Duke Blue Devils, because I know you're a closet Duke fan, and the potential for them for the rest of the season?
Well, first of all, Michael, I'm a Carolina fan through and through. I believe that Tar Heel blue. So it's always a great day when Duke loses. Nothing makes me happier than seeing Duke fall. But as far as the game goes, Kansas, they're international champions, and they showed why. They're a great team. They got great depth. And Duke's inexperience showed. Duke has a lot of freshmen on that team. They really only have Jeremy Rhodes returning. Dewey Harris for Kansas really made life tough for him. He's a great defender, and he made him make a lot of choices in that game. But one of the bright spots was Filipowski for Duke, that 7-foot freshman. He struggled shooting the ball a little bit, but he showed a lot of flashes. I think he had 14 rebounds that game. So he did it really well, and he had that one fake handoff drive and postered a dude. So that was a really promising spot there. But down the stretch of that game, Kansas experience just took over. They made the plays when they needed to. And Duke's inexperience showed, like I said, a lot of freshmen. So they really struggled down the stretch, and that's when Kansas took over and ran away with that game.
Now, I'm glad you brought up Filipowski. I've been really impressed with him. He's had three straight double-doubles to start out his career, and that's the first Duke freshman in history start their season, their career, with three straight double-doubles. And against Kansas, that's no easy task. And that drive with Filipowski, I feel like he's not just your typical 7-foot center anymore. Like, he's evolving with the game. Jeremy Roach's leadership helps, but you know, with the experience, that goes with the coaching too. I love John Shire. I feel like he is the future of Duke basketball, and he's been under Coach K for 9 years, but it doesn't replace being the guy and not having Coach K on the sidelines. Do you think that is going to be a transitional period for Duke this year?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, like you said, John Shire, it's his first year. It's the third game of the season. They're playing the reigning national champions. Everything is against them in that game. The same way, they're going through kind of the same struggles that Carolina went through last year with Hubert Davis being his first year. They had a lot of early struggles. So it's going to be a learning experience for John Shire, just not having Coach K there to take over when he needs to. But I think John Shire is going to be a great coach, like you said, as much as it pains me to say. But I do think that John Shire is going to be a good coach. He seems to be comfortable in that spot.
Now I like that take. That is a very in-pocket take from my friend Mason Childress. And speaking of, you know, your team, UNC, you guys have won. You're the number one team right now. But I've been very surprised how close these games are. There's no reason y'all should have been close to Gardner-Webb whatsoever. So, and y'all even return guys like Caleb Love and Baycott. What's the reasoning behind these close calls rather than blowing them out of the water and establishing your dominance early in the season?
Yeah, well, when you have a season like you do last year where you're the runner-up, you know, in the national championship game, you're going to have high expectations coming into the season. So that's going to be expected. Like you said, they are the number one team in the country. But one thing with Carolina is every year, they always, always, always struggle with those early non-conference games. Even if they are a lesser opponent, they played Wofford for like 5 or 6 years in a row, it seems like, and Wofford always played them close. You know, Wofford, they're a good team and all, but they're not a Carolina team. So I don't know what it is. Maybe it's just trying to mesh too. I really don't know what the struggles are. But like you said, they have struggled this season so far with UNC Wilmington. That was it was a double-digit game, but it seemed a lot closer than it was. The College Charleston game at UNC, I mean, Charleston had the halftime lead, you know. And then this Gardner-Webb game, you know, Wilmington and College Charleston, those are two really good teams. You know, they're not great programs as far as, like, you know, Chapel Hill, Carolina, but UNC Wilmington, they won 27 games last year. They're a good team. College of Charleston, they compete in their conference. So they're good teams. It still shouldn't have been a close game, but those are good teams. Gardner-Webb, they're not a good team. I don't know why that game was close. I can't explain that one. I'm glad that we won because we didn't. I wouldn't know what to say about that game. It was a really sloppy game all around. They eventually pulled it out, but I was not happy with that game whatsoever. It was definitely a struggle, that's for sure.
And at least y'all aren't losing. Like Gonzaga nearly lost to Michigan State, who was starred unranked. They're probably not going to be unranked anymore, and because they beat Kentucky earlier this week, and then Gonzaga fell hard to Texas. Like these are your top seeded schools, UNC and Gonzaga, you know, struggling early on in the season. Do you think they get their footing here soon?
Well, the thing with Gonzaga is they've always had a great point guard. They were talking about it during that Texas game, even going back to 2016, 2017. They had Nigel Williams-Goss, who was on that runner-up team. Josh Perkins, Jalen Suggs, all that. They've always had a point guard that can run the show. And this year,
Love Jalen Suggs, by the way.
Yeah, he's a great player. But they don't have that guy that can run the offense for him. They've got, obviously, Drew Timmy's returning. He's a big man. You know, he can't sit there and run the point guard position. And to be able to compete and to play in these big-time games, you've got to have a point guard that can run the offense. And Gonzaga didn't have that. They ended up having 20 turnovers in that game, you know. And if you turn the ball over 20 times, you're not going to win a game. Texas just beat them in every facet of the game, offensively, defensively, in fast break and all that. So it was definitely I wouldn't say it's a sign of panic for Gonzaga, but they got to figure it out real soon, that's for sure.
And if you're wondering where Jackson went, he kind of falls asleep during college basketball, so you probably fell asleep during this college basketball talk.
Yeah, man, I'm going to be honest with you. I have no idea what was just said. Let's talk about football again, guys. This is, let's talk football, guys. This is my topic, okay? Basketball, I love GG Jackson. Go Gamecocks. But we just lost by 32 points against Colorado State, so I don't really care for college basketball.
Yeah, you're repping the South Carolina Gamecocks today, but – You're just struggling in general. Who do they even play this weekend?
They play Tennessee.
They play Tennessee. Do you want to talk about that game?
You know what, Michael? I think I'm gonna pass.
Okay.
Well, I think I'm gonna pass on that one.
Right before we get into college football, because I do want Jackson's takes on the college football rankings that came out. Mason, my alma mater, App State, beat Louisville, and Louisville has lost three straight games to start the season by 1 point total. Like, that's insane. I was wondering if you had caught that game or had any thoughts about how big of a win that is for generally a football school.
Yeah, I mean, it was a big win for App State as far as their basketball program goes. I think it was their first win against a Power 5 school since 2014, and they beat Virginia Tech then. So it's been a long time coming for App State. But also, I think I'd say it's panic time for Louisville. I mean, yeah, it's only been a 1 point loss in each of the first three games. But those are some, forgive me, Michael, those are some really bad basketball teams that they were losing to. Louisville being an ACC school, you've got to be able to win those games. I know they've got a new coach with Kenny Payne, but that's tough. And it's going to be hard for them to rebound, to make any noise this season, losing those first three games, because the ACC doesn't get any easier.
Yeah. Hey, Mace, I got one question for you about college basketball. Should Louisville bring back Rick Pitino?
For PR reasons, I would say no. I think that is self-explanatory. I don't think I need to elaborate on that. But Kenny Payne is he's got to figure it out, because Rick Pitino is not an option.
It does seem like a coaching issue up in Louisville to lose to App State and lose each of your three games by a point. And also, that could have easily been UNC if things don't go their way against teams like UNCW or Gardner-Webb. But we're switching gears to college football real quick before we get Ryan Frick from Tap Outs and Touchdowns into the show. And Jackson, the college football rankings are released right now, and it's very interesting because right now the four that are in are Georgia, Ohio State, Michigan, and TCU. Obviously, we'll have the Ohio State-Michigan game next weekend, and that's probably going to shake it up, probably get Tennessee back in the mix. What are your thoughts on, you know, who is the odd team out? Is it going to be Ohio State and Michigan, whoever loses that game? Or do you think Tennessee can go up and just knock TCU out?
I have a hot take here, and I was talking to Mason about this over the phone about 30 minutes ago before we started. I don't think Tennessee makes it if they went out. I know that's a rare take, because you're going to have Ohio State or Michigan lose, right? I think Michigan loses. They drop out. They go to five. They go to 6-7. Ohio State makes it. I have Georgia, Ohio State, my 1-2. I don't think they lose out. I think they win out, both of those teams. I think TCU has a chance of dropping a game. They have three games left in the season, two of them ranked, including the championship game. I think if TCU drops, Tennessee's going to make it, because I think Michigan's out. Michigan, I'm already taking them out of the picture. TCU, if TCU drops a game too, then you make way for Tennessee. But a team that I think makes it, because they're going to finish out winning the next three games against ranked teams, is USC. USC with Caleb Williams, I think they make it. I think they win out. They finish the next three games in a dominant fashion, and I think they make it in. I think that's a hot take, but I don't know if it's a crazy take to make. What are your thoughts here, Michael?
Now, just so you know, you did say USC, and thanks for acknowledging
the fake USC. The fake USC, the one in California, not the real USC. Excuse me.
The real USC is Southern California. That's what everybody's mind goes to. If they beat UCLA this weekend, and then they follow it up with, you know, a
Notre
win
Dame.
The following weekend.
Notre Dame.
They got Notre Dame, maybe, but Tennessee's only blemish is to number one Georgia. I don't know how you can leapfrog Tennessee, because if Tennessee wins out, I really want them in that top four. They deserve it. They've earned it. They beat Bama. They were the first team to beat Bama. I can't see the college football playoff without Tennessee, man. I'm sorry.
No, I get it. And here's the thing. I think Tennessee's probably the second best team in the country. Like, I'm being honest. I think Tennessee's probably the second best team in the country. And I think if they make it to the four, I think you have a Georgia-Tennessee game that is huge. But I just have a hard time seeing the committee put USC, who's going to finish the season with three ranked wins, not in. It's hard for me to see that happening.
Yeah, USC is going to make a compelling case. I think Ohio State or Michigan drops out. TCU are speed demons. They are fast. Who knows if anyone can slow them down. But we got a guy here. We got Ryan Frick from Tap Outs and Touchdowns here next on Out of Pocket with Michael Davis. Thank you so much for Jackson and Mason. Mason for his Out of Pocket debut. We're going to have to do this again, Mason.
Yeah, for sure. I had a lot of fun.
All right. We're going to see you after the break with Ryan Frick at Tap Outs and Touchdowns as Out of Pocket with Michael Davis continues as part of your TGI Friday lineup. Welcome back to Out of Pocket with Michael Davis on Tobacco Road Sports Radio, tobaccoroadsportsradio.com, and WWBG 1470 AM as part of your TGI Friday lineup. And for the first time ever on Out of Pocket, I am joined by Ryan Frick from the Tap Outs and Touchdowns podcast that you can see on Tobacco Road Sports Radio. Ryan, how are you doing today?
I'm good, man. I'm ready to talk some wrestling, dude. It's been a while. I haven't had my own wrestling show in a couple weeks, so I'm excited to talk some wrestling with you today, man. Really excited.
Yeah, and if anyone doesn't know, we were just chatting up during the break. Just a lot of wrestling to talk about, and you kind of go by the nickname Bully Rye. Is that right?
Yeah, man. It's your guy, Bully Rye from Tap Outs and Touchdowns. Yeah, it's a sort of a moniker I took because of a Facebook page that I helped run based around wrestling. I sort of took some of the harsher takes and it sort of joked around like, you can't be a bully, man. Like, you're one of the admins of this group. And so, okay, now I'll go by the moniker Bully Rye. I mean, it's a play on Bully Ray. He doesn't have Bully Rye trademarked at least. So maybe I should get on that. But yeah, Bully Rye is a moniker that I talk about with wrestling, but I don't live it too seriously. So
yeah, you might want to look into trademarking Bully Rye. And if Bully Ray is listening, you know, please don't take any legal accusations against us. But today's a very special day, and it is the 10-year anniversary of The Shield's debut in WWE, The Shield at Survivor Series 2012, interrupted the WWE title match between CM Punk, John Cena, and Ryback. And I got to pose this question to you, Rye. Who's had the better career in the last 10 years? Because they've all taken their different paths in wrestling.
Ooh, I mean, listen, at this point, you'd have to argue with Roman Reigns. I mean, you could make an argument for Seth Rollins. In fairness, Jon Moxley was the only one that left. He had himself a decent career. You know, he won the New Japan, the IWGP United States title as soon as he left WWE. It was sort of the shocking, like, well, The Shield has been a mainstay in WWE for, you know, at the time it was something like 8 years. Moxley's made a decent career for himself outside of WWE. Rollins, a multi-time world universal champion. But at this point, like, Rollins has kind of reinvented himself a few times. The argument for Roman was that, like, well, it's the same old song and dance. He's still using the Shield music. He's still doing the same, like, hand gesture and the Superman punch, and he was still doing the big ooh-ah chant with his vest on. COVID came and allowed him some time to sort of step away. He came back with a brand new set of porcelain veneers and a new attitude, and now he is fourth or fifth longest reigning WWE champion in history. They push it every time that he has a title defense. The I think it's Pedro Morales, Hulk Hogan, Bruno Sammartino being the only guys ahead of him. I sort of have my thoughts on who might take the title from him, but nevertheless, like, at this point, like, they knew that Roman Reigns was going to be the guy that they wanted to push. And at this point, he has been champion for going on, if not more than 2 years at this point. So
been 2 years.
Yeah. Which is wild to think about in this day and age, because nobody ever thought that was going to happen. Like, for a while, especially during the Attitude Era, like, it seemed like years, but you had guys that only had the title for a month, some a week. So it was unthinkable. And for someone like Roman Reigns to come in and be a champion in this decade, in this century, in this millennium for 2 years, it says something. And that's where I would say that he's had the best career since because of the success that he is having now when the fans had sort of turned on him because it was the same old song and dance. And now he has become this new character and this great heel with the bloodline. You'd have to say hands down, it's got to be Roman Reigns.
And you brought up a really good point. WWE pretty much handpicked Roman Reigns to take over. And they paired him up with Seth Rollins and, at the time, Dean Ambrose, who were indie darlings. They knew how to wrestle. They knew how to carry a match. Roman comes in as the guy, right? Like, he has the look. He has everything you want in a WWE superstar. And they kind of protected him in that way. And they even protected him by keeping him with the Shield character. And I have to give props to Jon Moxley, who will talk about his pending world title match this weekend at Full Gear in a moment. But he was the one who was, hey, I'm going to forge my own path. He kind of saw that Roman was going to be the guy, and he had already reached his ceiling in WWE. So he took a gamble on himself and left for AEW, which kudos to him. I think it's worked out. He's the only three-time AEW world champion, probably thanks to CM Punk in a way for that. And
I mean, listen, like, you got to take into consideration too. Like, I know you said Dean Ambrose was an indie darling, knew how to wrestle. I'll politely agree to disagree there. I don't think he's the greatest wrestler in the world, despite being AEW world champion. His like lunatic fringe that carried over into the Jon Moxley character, I understand it all. But yeah, to your point, like, there was an old show on WWE Network where JBL would interview people, and one of those interviews was Michael Hayes. And JBL asked, who's the next big stars? And he said Sasha Banks and Roman Reigns. He didn't hesitate with Roman Reigns. Like, they knew what they were going to do. So the problem is that we all saw it coming, and we saw how much, the old adage that they were shoving Roman down our throats. In my opinion, I think they were a year late coming on Roman, because the year that he won the Royal Rumble, The Rock couldn't even get him over. The year prior, he had a great showing in that Rumble, and the crowd was hot for him, but he didn't win the Rumble. I think had he won the Rumble that year, that would have been taken advantage of the momentum that he had, and instead they waited too long, and the crowd soured, and it stayed sour until post-COVID when he came down and beat up Bray Wyatt and Braun Strowman and won the title and never let go of it since.
Now, we can't dismiss the fact that the Royal Rumble, that they fans were behind Roman, he was still a part of the Shield. He still had Seth Rollins and Dean Ambrose kind of covering up what he was. And then you took the Shield away from him, and they've already picked their favorites. They picked Rollins, they picked Ambrose, and Reigns was kind of left out there to dry. But we credited Rollins for being a reinvention king, which he is. But with the way Roman's reinvented his character, we saw a couple weeks ago Roman Reigns defend his title successfully against Logan Paul. Nobody should be surprised at that result. But I wanted to pose this to you because, I watched it. You probably watched it, I think, a couple of days later. Just your initial reaction for that match, because to me, to have your two-year-plus champion Roman Reigns, who's probably going to 1,000 days eventually, to have him go toe-to-toe with a guy in his third match, it kind of tarnishes Roman's reign, doesn't it? It shows anybody can beat him.
I mean, listen, it doesn't show nobody can beat him because he didn't lose. Getting celebrities in wrestling has been something since Vince McMahon did it at WrestleMania 1. You have Mr. T main eventing the WrestleMania with Hulk Hogan. Eventually, you would have Lawrence Taylor main eventing WrestleMania against Bam Bam Bigelow, which is still shocking that closed the show. Mr. T was an actor, but Lawrence Taylor was an athlete. WCW took advantage of it. Dennis Rodman had some matches at WCW. Kevin Green, and of course, I'm losing his Reggie White even had a match against probably quite possibly the worst wrestler to go into WCW in Steve Mongo McMichael. But I don't think you're right. I did watch the match a few days late. I don't think the match tarnishes his legacy again, ultimately, because he won. If anything, I think he strengthened his legacy, and I'll tell you why. Everybody wants to give credit to Logan Paul about how athletic he is. And he's a great wrestler already in his third match. He's phenomenal. Like, he's so much better. Even people compare him to Dominic Mysterio about how far behind Dominic is versus Logan Paul. And I don't think that's the case at all. I think Logan Paul is an athlete. As much as I've been on my show and said how much I dislike the Paul brothers, Logan Paul, at the end of the day, is an athlete. I think that in that spot, I think Pat McAfee could have had the same match that Logan Paul had with Roman Reigns. Where it strengthens Roman's legacy is that in matches that Roman has had where he showed that he was dominant and he showed why he is the champion, he has been against wrestlers who were able to carry him to really good matches. I'm looking at guys like Daniel Bryan, Bryan Danielson. I'm talking about guys like, and of course I'm drawing a blank on his name all of a sudden, AJ Styles. I'm wearing his shirt. Come on, get it together, bully. So guys have been able to carry Roman Reigns to really good matches because Roman, it's sort of like the old reason why everybody hated John Cena was that he had the five moves of doom. But Roman's got a spear. He's got the sidekick, whatever it is. The drive-by on the outside punch. Of the ring, the Superman punch. It's the same thing. Now, Roman has been able to create this character where he can run his mouth in the matches, and that sort of helps him like be this like strong heel and be able to run his mouth. But he's never been able to carry someone to a good match. In this match with Logan Paul, is still not a great seller. You could tell he was taking clotheslines wrong. He just wasn't landing right. And that's not something you're going to be able to do in three matches. But having Roman be there to be able to sell some of the stuff that he did, be it the one lucky punch, the frog splash on the top rope, it was a really fun spot because went on Instagram Live to do it. And that got over like 2 million views and 2 million impressions. Roman was able to sell for Logan Paul so much so that it made Logan Paul a believable wrestler. The same way that The Miz did in their match at SummerSlam. If you're able to carry someone to make them look that strong, that's always been what made good wrestlers separate themselves from great wrestlers. And the fact that Roman was able to carry this match and make Logan Paul look so strong speaks wonders about the development that Roman has had in the ring. And I can't believe I'm saying this. Like it's sort of like kind of maybe change my opinion about Roman Reigns at this point. Like he's a really good wrestler. And that's something I never thought I'd hear me say, 3-4 years ago. But between his character development and his ability to carry a match like he did against Logan Paul, if he gets in the ring with anybody with athletic ability as Logan Paul did, he's now shown that he can have a good match with someone like that. If he can, be that guy that can carry it.
Now, you did bring up a good point with Roman Reigns and his wrestling ability. We've had Jason Cetek, a good friend of mine, on the show several times, and he's celebrating his birthday this week. Happy birthday, Jason. And he's brought up in the past, he brought this up like 2-3 years ago. You can't name a bad Roman Reigns match. I mean, they're all like decently okay. You can't name any like bad ones that stick out.
But I think his match with Edge was pretty bad. And that's no. Yeah.
What, Money in the Bank?
Yeah, dude, like, listen, so...
I disagree.
Yeah.
That's out of pocket, Ryan. That's out of
pocket. Nice plug there. No, I mean, listen, I think Edge, it's a great story that he can come back and wrestle again, and you're eventually going to get the payoff of him in Judgment Day 2. But at the end of the day, like, every Edge match that he has had since he's come back has been slow-paced. The stadium match that he had with Randy Orton at WrestleMania was boring. It was one of the only matches that almost put me to sleep. Maybe it was because there was no crowd, and so it was quiet. Whenever the pipes would fall on the ground, when the pipes were done making the noise, there was nothing there to mask it. So, I like the idea spear versus spear. Same thing, like I believe he had one with Goldberg too. Listen, there are plenty of matches. If you really wanted to go back to the catalog, there are plenty of Roman Reigns matches that you could be like, wow, this is. This wasn't as good as we expected it to be. And I think the Edge match is at the top of the list, but I digress. I think that a lot of the times when you have a guy like, again, even Randy Orton, a Rollins for that matter, an AJ Styles, when you have guys like that who can make you look like $1 million, the matches aren't going to be bad. But when you have a guy who's just an athlete and not a wrestler like Logan Paul, and you have someone like Roman Reigns who can make him look like a you know, that some people might argue that was close to a 4-5 star match. But again, it's and listen, you'd be surprised. There are some people that absolutely loved that match and thought it was the best match WWE has done in years, and they're completely ignoring the two matches between Sheamus and Gunther. But yeah, it was a good match, and Roman carried it. And I think you can find some bad Roman matches, but this wasn't one of them.
And we're going to make sure that Edge realizes that that take is totally Ryan's, totally out of pocket, not Michael's at all whatsoever.
It's to be clear, I love Edge, and he lives like an hour and a half from me. I would love to run into him working in a grocery store. I love Edge. I loved his character back then. I love his character now. I love when he started Judgment Day. I'm a huge fan of Edge. And I'm, again, very grateful he was able to come back from his neck injury. But as a fan, like, I'm glad you got your comeback story. Maybe give him a title run when Roman's dropped the title a few months from now and let him ride off into the sunset when the time's right. Because, it's not rated R Edge. It's post-neck injury, like, comeback Edge. Like, there's a difference.
I think it's a character more so because it's more of a methodical approach to his matches. But we digress. We only have a few more minutes left before we get into franchise players as part of your TGI Friday lineup. Full Gear tomorrow night. It's MJF versus Jon Moxley, formerly known as Dean Ambrose of the Shield. Ryan, I have a way I feel like this goes down. I feel like instead of the Dynamite Diamond Ring that MJF promises he will not use, I think he's going to use William Regal's brass knuckles to end Jon Moxley's title run and walk away with the world title. Is that an out-of-pocket take, Ryan?
Listen, I like that, dude. Like, now here's the question. Does William Regal give him the Nux, or does he just have them with him? Because that would be a huge swerve. If you've got William Regal swerving, giving MJF the Nux, and basically blowing up the Blackpool Combat Club. That'd be cool, right?
I hadn't thought about, I don't know if MJF needs William Regal.
Oh, he doesn't. Absolutely not.
But that would be a swerve. But ever since MJF say he didn't need the Dynamite Diamond Ring, I'm like, boom, brass knuckles.
I think we're going to get swerved. I think that the Firm or whatever they're called, I think they're going to have something to play in here. I think that eventually they're going to interfere and they're going to leave MJF alone. Moxley's going to get a semi beat down. MJF is going to like save the day, but then we're going to see the same old heel MJF. Maybe he hits a low blow, gets the win. And the next night the next Dynamite, he comes out and says, you know, I didn't need the Firm, you know, whatever. And then it's revealed that like he was behind the Firm all along. Like he was just playing along because MJF, if nothing else, is the king of swerves in pro wrestling. So, yeah, I think I love your take that he uses the brass knucks. I think, however it happens, MJF does take the title from Moxley this weekend. Whether or not it was the best work in wrestling history when he asked for his release in his vulgar tangent on Dynamite, if you want to call it that, or if part of the deal for him to come back was legitimately to put the title on him, because in my opinion, maybe not as far as an in-ring talent, but he's the best talker in the business today. And he's good enough in the ring that he can handle himself. So I think after everything that's happened, this is the time for MJF to take the title. They don't bring him back to feed him to Moxley. Like this is, I mean, again, Moxley wouldn't be champion had Punk not punked out and gotten essentially suspended and eventually released from AEW. Moxley wouldn't still be the champion. So I think there was no better time than to put the title on MJF right now.
And I feel like we got robbed of the MJF taking the title off CM Punk after MJF's quote unquote pipe bomb at the beginning of the summer. But that'll be another story for another time. We got the Elite returning this weekend facing Death Triangle. The Elite were stripped of the trio styles after the Punk media scrum. Real quick, Ryan, do you think the Elite get the titles back?
Oh, absolutely. I just hope they don't make them available for the press conference afterwards. Just let them take the titles and send them home. you don't need any more nonsense after the show. Just take the titles, enjoy your two-time trios championships, and walk out the door. Show up on Dynamite, be in a good mood.
Well, hopefully they don't invite the Elite with the media scrum, but they could invite my friend Ryan, the host of Tap Outs and Touchdowns. Real quick, tell the people where they can listen to you.
You can listen wherever you get your podcast, Spotify, Google Podcast, Apple Podcast. I've got some shows up on YouTube. Search Tap Outs and Touchdowns on YouTube. You can find me on social media, facebook.com/tapoutsandtouchdowns, Twitter, on Twitter at Tap Outs and TDs. And yeah, just come check me out. If there's anything you want to listen to or want my friend PJ, Steven, and I to dive into, or if you want to hear some fantasy football advice, I can give you the best advice that I can give. So yeah, listen, Mike, this has been a great experience. I really appreciate you having me on today. This is awesome.
Of course, we're going to have you back on again, talking wrestling, talking football maybe, but we're against the hour. Thank you so much for listening in. Franchise Players Next is part of your TGI Friday lineup on TobaccoRoadSportsRadio.com and WWBG 1470 AM, and we will see you next week.